Views and opinions expressed by the hosts are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of their employers. This podcast may not be suitable for children. Adults may find details triggering and/or offensive. Listener's discretion is advised. Well, Tuesday sure does come around fast around here.
It sure does.
This is Priscilla.
And this is Norma.
And you're listening to
It's the Mystery for Me.
Back from Cabo. Not that anyone missed anything. We didn't skip any week, so it's okay.
Must be nice.
Well, if you renewed your passport, you could come on these trips, but you just, I don't know what's going on.
I forgot to do that, actually.
Well, let's not forget, so you can come along, experience this Black girl luxury. Come on. Anyways, sure. Welcome back to another episode of It's the Mystery for Me, and I mean, I don't think this is surprising anymore. Norma's hosting.
I am.
Listen, they love you. Mm-hmm. They love the Aries, okay? They feel indifferent about this Capricorn. But my parents said, as long as I love myself, that's all that matters. Or actually, I tell myself that.
Mm-hmm.
Typical narcissist. Anyways, what do you have in store for us today? What case are we here to?
So for today's episode, I did watch an episode of In Ice Cold Blood. This is hosted by actually Ice-T. It fit the role so perfectly. When I was watching it, it made me think of SVU.
Oh, Detective Tutuola Finn.
So
his SVU episodes be cracking me up because he always has like one line, like, I'll never forget someone stepped on his sneakers and he was like, oh, hell no. And I was like, a white audience watching this might not understand. But like, it was just hilarious.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. So obviously that's probably why it's called In Ice Cold Blood. I also looked at various news articles through Oxygen and News 5 articles for Memphis, Tennessee, and so forth. I also looked at Court of Appeals document, and that was really all that there was for this case.
And you can find all of today's sources on our website, itsthemysteryforme.com, or just scroll down a bit, and you should find it in our show notes for this episode.
This case takes us back to 2010 in Memphis, Tennessee. This is a case of Jacqueline Miller. So in 2010, Jacqueline was a 21-year-old. She was a Memphis, Tennessee native, and her parents did split when she was very young. For the most part, she grew up pretty close to the rest of her family, aunts, cousins, for example, and then at some point she ended up living with her grandmother. Her family describes her as being sweet and funny and very caring. In high school, she decided that she had a passion for hair and makeup, which kind of reminded me of myself because I always liked hair and makeup.
You really did.
In high school,
you
and watching
me into it.
YouTube videos back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2009, Jacqueline ended up attending a hair academy called New Wave Hair Academy. And while she was there, she met some friends. This one friend in particular who spoke on An Ice Cold Murder described Jacqueline as being beautiful, tall, fashionable, that she pretty much could do anything when it came to hair, and she was the go-to person. She Damn. Actually ended up graduating top of her class.
Amazing.
That's how good she was. She was a rising star. Jackie also helped this one friend get a job at the hair salon that she was working at. So this friend said, you know, she was the type of person that she would do anything for anyone, and if you needed a favor and she was able and willing to help you, she would do it.
That's a solid friend. Let me tell you, I feel like there's not that many solid people out there today.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like friendships are kind of like soulmates. Sometimes you only get like one good one in your lifetime or two good ones in your lifetime. You kind of have to hold on to those people.
Yeah. And that,
and she sounded like one of those people.
Definitely. That seems to be the type of relationship that they had for sure.
Yeah.
So during her time at the New Wave Hair Academy, Jacqueline, who is also known as Jackie by her friends and her family, she met a fellow classmate, Richard Dickerson, and he was a barber at the time. He was studying to get his master barber license. Jackie was pretty private about her love life. Her friends said that eventually she made it known that, you know, her and Richard were pursuing things and were in a relationship and trying to see where can this go. Richard was described as being tall, good looking. He was seen as a strong guy and someone that really protected Jackie and just gave her a sense of security that she was looking for.
So he's the opposite so far of that fool from the last episode. Yeah. I mean, you told me, I think it was off the mic, how the guy in the last episode was known to be not so good looking, not it, y'all. Mm-hmm. And someone wrote that in our comments, and I was like, I'm pretty sure Norma said this, that like in the TV show, that like the detective or somebody said, you know, these women like Carla going crazy over him.
But he was not
a looker. And he was just not it. Can you imagine them saying that about you on national TV?
And then I saw the picture of him and I was like, okay, I understand why they're saying he
no
shit.
Lies told. But, So Richard, I mean, let's see. I hope Richard don't turn out to be, you know, ain't shit either. But I guess time will tell. Time next will 40 tell. Minutes will tell.
Yeah. Buckle up too, because, wow.
Then it's like, surprise, shoddy. Oh, no. I'm scared.
Okay, well, let's flash forward a little bit to April 2010. This is when Jackie graduated highest in her class, like I mentioned, and she started working full-time at the salon that she was at. During this time, she is living with her grandmother, so she's able to save up enough money to purchase her very first car. And she's very, very proud of herself. This was really a mark of independence for her as a 21-year-old. It was a green Mazda sedan, and I believe it was a 1998. It doesn't matter because, you know, Mazdas are good cars, and Dad still drives his Mazda, and that's a 2005.
Right.
You know?
Right. And it gets you from point A to point B.
Yeah.
I drive a Mercedes 2022. I'm not kidding, but, you know, I'm just saying, it really doesn't matter. As long as it gets you from point A to point B, and before I had my Mercedes two-door coupe or whatever, E450 AMG, before I had this, I had my Infiniti for what? Like 10-plus years, right? My 2010 Infiniti. It never failed me, let me tell you. And it does stuff that, like, my Mercedes can't even keep up with, and my Mercedes is newer. So at the end of the day, the year doesn't matter.
Yep, I agree. But since you did mention 2010, let's actually hop back into Jackie's story. It is now November 19th, 2010. Jackie's family is pretty frantic. They have not heard from her for a few days. And her mother in particular, who I believe her name is also... Oh, wait. Yeah, her name is Jacqueline as well. It's just spelled differently. Her mom ends up calling 911, and she reports Jackie missing. She told them that she had been trying to contact Jackie over the past 2 days. She hadn't seen her in 2 days, and that was very uncommon. Remember, Jackie's very close with her family.
Right.
And I believe Jackie was also an only child. I couldn't find anything saying that, you know, she had other siblings. I only saw that she, you know, it's her mom, her stepfather, her dad, and other relatives, cousins, aunts, her grandmother. Her mom tried calling her, tried texting her. There was no answer. Her cousin, Janice, says that the last time that she spoke to Jackie was on November 17th, so 2 days prior. And that at the time that she was talking to her, Jackie was doing her mother's hair. So I don't know if she was on the phone with her for very long, but she didn't think anything of it until, again, these 2 days go by. No one has heard from her. Police start by going to Jackie's mom and getting more information from her, specifically as to, does Jackie know anyone? Is she dating anyone? The mom says, oh yeah, Jackie's dating her former classmate from this hair school. His name is Richard Dickerson, and he's 24 years old, and he lives with his mother. Going off of that information, the very next day on November 20th, the cops go over to Richard's mom's house where Richard lives. On that same day, her family's also posting missing posters throughout the town. There's also a news story that goes out about Jackie being reported missing. This is technically the second day that she has been reported missing. So when cops meet with Richard, they say that he seemed really genuine and genuinely upset. He seemed very cooperative. Richard just briefly tells them that he did see Jackie on Monday and Tuesday. And she stayed over Monday. She left Tuesday morning. When Jackie left, she seemed like she was in a really good mood. And that was the last time that he saw her and the last time that he spoke to her. And I thought, you haven't spoken to your girlfriend since Tuesday? And it is now Saturday, technically?
And he didn't like, reach out to her family or, like,
ask anybody? It didn't appear that he had.
Huh.
So I thought that that was very strange, but that I don't know. Strange. The detectives on the show, they didn't seem to be concerned about the statement at all. I put a question mark next to it.
I don't know. Like, I need my man to be all up under me. You feel me? So it's like, you haven't heard from me. I don't know. I got to hear more, though, about, like, whether or not her phone had missing calls, missing texts.
Right. Hmm. Yeah. So Richard basically said, you know, I was with my mom all day for Tuesday and Wednesday. He was asked straight up, though, like, do you have anything to do with Jacqueline's disappearance? And he said no. They then asked him, do you know of anyone who Jackie is involved with? And Richard answered, yeah, this guy Marcus, who Jackie dated before me. But at this point, they don't know who Marcus is, and he also doesn't have Marcus's, like, information or contact number or anything. So they're now thinking, how do we get in contact with Marcus? So the next day, November 21st, there's a tipster that calls into Crime Stopper, and they report seeing Jackie in Orange Mound, Tennessee, which happens to be a pretty dangerous neighborhood in Memphis, Tennessee.
Hmm.
And this was really shocking to her family because they're like, why would she be out there? They just were very confused. Detectives were concerned because, again, that's a dangerous area. So it's very, like, crime-ridden, lots of gangs. So they're thinking, like, shit, we got to work quickly because she may have been abducted. Mm-hmm. Because this person specifically said that Jackie looked disoriented and out of place, basically.
Mm.
The Crime Stopper hotline, the operator, tries to get more information from this person. When they try to ask them, okay, like, who was she with? They hung up. So it's just kind of like, yeah, they hang up.
Okay.
Which detective said is, like, so annoying. But then again, they're also trying to understand it from the point of view of the caller. If this person really knows who's in on this, they're probably scared for their own lives.
Right.
So that's the flip side to it. But
oof.
Again, it's just, you know, you get this tip and it goes nowhere. But the detectives do tell her family, like, we did get this call. This is what they said. And her aunt said something really interesting. She said to the detectives that she also got a very similar call and that it was one of Jackie's acquaintances. But the show doesn't go exactly into who this was.
Do they know if it was the same person who called the Crime Stoppers line?
They didn't make that clear. They just said the person that called Crime Stopper was a female. And I believe that the person that called her aunt was a male. So
could they have been, like, switching their voice? Like,
I wonder that
too.
Are
they, like, a Glorilla? And I love Glow. I love her deep voice. But I'm just saying, like, at first I didn't know Glorilla was Glorilla. You feel me? I thought it was some dude. I don't know. But I love her voice.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I was thinking that too. You never know. They had actually asked her aunt for $900. And they
Excuse me?
They said Jackie's alive. They know where she is. Give them $900 and basically they'll take her to her.
And this was an acquaintance?
Yeah, that's why I was so confused. I'm like, this doesn't sound right. Her aunt ended up giving her phone number to the cops, though.
Okay.
Detectives were able to get in contact with this still unidentified man because he was never named on the show. They basically were pressing him because they felt that he was trying to make a quick buck. So even though he was saying things that were credible, technically, this information he likely got from the flyer postings, he likely heard it on the news. So they felt like he took the information and was trying to run with it and make money off of it. When they pressed him on that, he kind of, like, fell back because they said, you know, like, we can arrest you for lying. You know, this is interfering with the investigation. This man now gives a description of the person that he saw with Jackie, but that description did not match Richard. So at this point, detectives are like, okay, so who is this man? Was there another man in Jackie's life? And is this person her old fling, Marcus? Her friend from the hair salon said that a few weeks leading up to Jackie's disappearance, that she became very quiet, very reserved, and that was not like her at all. Detectives look into Jackie's social media, and then they find messages between her and Marcus. And Marcus is the last guy that Richard said that she dated.
Right. And we don't know what platform it was on, right? Because at the time, 2010, what's popping? Black Twitter.
Facebook.
Yeah.
Instagram.
Yeah, they were not clear on that.
I think this was pre, like, Instagram DMs. I feel like it was prehistoric times.
When they said DMs, I just figured Facebook. Right. That's what I immediately thought of.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. At this point, they need to know who Marcus is. They want to know, you know, what's his last known address? What's his phone number? And who knows him? A relative of Marcus ends up coming forward, and they say, he's hot-tempered, that he was actually arrested for it.
Okay, so he has an arrest record?
He does, but it makes me wonder, why would his relative come forward and say all that? Why would they...
Like, unsolicited.
Yeah.
So they think he's capable
of
hurting Jackie.
Yes.
Whew. If your family, if your own family think you're capable, you know what? You probably are.
Yep.
Because not everybody's just a hater, you know what I'm saying? Not all your cousins are hating on you.
Right.
So I'm kind of like on my toes now. Like, did he hurt Jackie?
Mm-hmm. And detectives are on their toes too. So on November 22nd, they finally get into contact with Marcus and they meet with him. Marcus basically tells detectives what his day looks like on Tuesday, November 16th. He said that he did see Jackie on that day, on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And that they were supposed to meet up that Wednesday, the 17th, but they never did. He was at home, actually, on the 17th, all by himself. So that was his alibi, that he was alone.
So pretty much he has no alibi.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's not a good alibi.
It is not. But the detectives did say that he seemed sincere and genuinely concerned. So that's a flip side to it, but it doesn't look good that there's no one to vouch for you. Exactly. Or you're not on candid camera somewhere, or you don't have a receipt to say that you were at this place at this time.
Mm-hmm.
It is now November 22nd, and Jackie's family is freaking out. They are growing wary. They are just on the edge of their seats. They're scared. They don't know what to think. They're still handing out flyers every single day. You know, they have not lost hope, and... Her cousin Janice, she made it a point on the show that every single day she would take the picture of Jackie and she would kiss it and say, "Where are you?" Mm. And when I saw that part, it made me really sad.
Yeah.
Her friend also said that at the hair salon, Jackie's clients were asking, "Where's Jackie?" Because that was another thing. When her mom had called to report Jackie missing, her mom said that Jackie hadn't been in at work and she was supposed to be at work and she never made it. So clients are kind of wondering, like, what's happening? But the friend made it seem like they weren't really sure what to tell the clients. But I'm sure the clients have seen the news, I would think.
Right.
I don't know. But they just weren't sure what to tell them because they're asking, okay, like, when is she going to be in? What's happening?
Oh.
Yeah.
It's like we don't have an answer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then on November 23rd, a real break in the case happens. There's an anonymous caller. I know what you're thinking. Like, are they going to hang up? Like, what's going on with this this time? They actually report seeing a green Mazda sedan in Willows Creek's apartment complex. It's about a mile from Jackie's house and a mile from her job. When detectives arrive, they take the VIN number, they run it, and it turns out to be Jackie's car. The CSI, they process the car, and they can immediately tell that it was wiped down on the inside.
Mm.
I don't know if they got any prints from the outside. It was unclear.
Okay.
But perhaps, you know, if the inside was wiped down, this person probably tried to wipe down the outside, too. They did find a purse in the vehicle that belonged to Jackie. And another interesting factor is that the car itself was parked backwards against a fence. So meaning that the trunk was against the fence.
Mm. In Memphis, do people have front plates and back plates?
I don't think that they have front plates.
Hmm. Because I'm thinking to myself, if someone parking backwards, it could be to hide the
license. No, that's literally what the detective said. They did it purposely to hide the back license tag. Yeah.
I just felt it.
But now that you say that, I'm kind of curious because, let me see.
New York is supposed to have two plates. Yeah. I have one plate.
Still? On this car too?
Yeah, because when I picked it up at the dealership, they asked me if I wanted to have them like bolted in. But they're like, I don't know. Do you want us to, you know, it's brand new kind of. They're technically supposed to. So I don't even know why they would even be like, it's up to you. And of course I was like, nah. But I said, give me the plate just in case because I don't want to hear my dad. I'm 31 and I'm like, I don't want to hear what daddy got to say about it.
Okay, so Tennessee is a one-plate state.
Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, I knew it.
At this point, they move to the trunk. And they open the trunk and they see a body of a female.
No, I was not expecting you to say that. I feel like every show, people open the trunk and nobody's in it. Lately.
That's true. I think one of the episodes I did, there was no one, there was nothing there in the car or the trunk. So yeah.
There's a body in the trunk. Oh no.
Yeah. And they could tell that had been there for quite a few days.
Oh my goodness.
Right? Because at this point, this is the 23rd of November. There's a ligature mark on her neck showing that she was strangled. There's a piece of rope around her neck.
Oh my goodness.
She had bruises around her neck. There was blood on her clothes. She had broken nails, which showed that she was trying to fight. A busted lip. It was definitely a struggle. And detective said that whoever did this was pure evil.
Oh my gosh.
The detective said, you know, he has seen many things in his life. It comes with the job. But he said, like, this has haunted him.
Jeez.
And he'll never be able to get this out of his mind.
Oh my goodness. That's scary. It's literally giving me chills.
Yeah.
Oof.
But like I said, it had been a few days, so they couldn't positively identify her, actually. They used dental records.
No. That is horrible.
So the evidence that they do collect, they end up sending to Forensic Crime Lab in Tennessee. So the rope tied around her neck, they sent in. They took DNA from under her nails.
Okay.
They sent that in and a piece of her shirt that had blood on it. At this point, they're like, okay, we can't play any games. We got to figure out who did this to her because this is really insane. They expedited Jackie's cell phone record. And they also happened to be waiting on Marcus's cell phone records to come in too. I did say that, right?
You definitely mentioned that they were going to subpoena.
Okay.
Or at least, like, I don't know. I heard you mention it. I don't know if we already cut that part out.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. So there is a broadcast on the news saying that Jackie's car was found and that there was a body found. Again, it was not positively identified at this point as being her, but that's how her friend found out. And she said she was so shocked. She couldn't believe it. Then the family gets a phone call from the detectives and they tell her family that they found her car. They found a body. It's likely Jackie. But they have not been able to positively identify her at this point. But her cousin said that at the time that the family got the phone call, they were actually handing out missing flyers.
Oh, no.
So it was really upsetting. Now it's November 24th of 2010, and another tip comes in.
Another one? Like, I'm not trying to sound like DJ Khaled when I said that, but I'm really serious. Like, another tip. About what, though?
Well, on November 24th, there's a lot that comes in. So there's a lot of information coming from everywhere.
Okay.
A lot happened on this day.
Huh.
So one of the first tips that comes in is that the security guard that worked at the Willows Creek apartment complex where Jackie's car was found, he calls in and he says that he believes that he saw Jackie's car day of. in real time. He said that he saw someone driving a green Mazda into the parking lot. And okay. He was actually there. He was not working that night. He was there to pick up his paycheck. But he saw someone come in, park the car, and then get out of the car. And it was a male. It was a black male.
Okay.
And he described the male as being 6 foot tall, slim, low haircut. He said it was only one person in the car. It was this one guy. He got out of the car. He got back into the car after he had parked it. And then he saw the person reverse and park on the other side and purposely back up the car against the fence.
Okay.
So that the tag wasn't showing.
Got you.
And he thought that that was a little odd.
But wait a minute. I don't think you described Marcus. So what does he look like?
Honestly, they never went into details about Marcus like that.
Oh, okay. No. So keep going. Right.
Okay.
This does sound like a twisty story now because I'm like, huh?
But okay. They're thinking, does Marcus like really fit into this description? Or, you know, it could be anyone that lives in this apartment complex. That's what they were thinking. Okay. It was just, the description was too vague is what I'm trying to say. So on this day, November 24th, there's more information, like I was saying, that came in. It was confirmed by the coroner's office that Jackie had, in fact, died of strangulation.
Ugh, so it was her in the trunk.
Yes. And that she likely had died on or about the time of November 17th.
Oh, my goodness.
Detectives also received Jackie's cell phone records and Marcus's cell phone records on the 24th of November. So there's so many moving parts coming in on this day. What they did find from looking at the records is that on the 17th, Marcus's phone didn't ping anywhere near the Willows Creek apartment complex. In fact, it was in one location around his neighborhood, so likely around or in his house, and that he hadn't left. Like he said, he was home all day.
Wait a minute. So when they found that security guard that saw the guy drive in the car, he saw that on November 17th?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. I mean, listen, remember that one case we did? I think her name was Danielle Brooks, where like the guy left his phone at home on purpose to throw off cops. So like, okay, Marcus was seen at, or is showing that he's at home, but I'm going to just let you tell us some more.
Let's see if it no, that's the case. That's a really good point. It really is. Mm-hmm. When they do look at Jackie's phone, though, it shows that she was around Richard's house, Richard as in her boyfriend, and she had been calling him. There were several phone calls that went out to Richard. And they noticed that her phone was turned off soon after making those phone calls to Richard. So at this point, they're like, okay, maybe we have to go back and look into Richard. I mean, for the most part, up until this point, he was very much compliant with them. So they thought, okay, let's ask him a few more questions.
Wait a minute. So jog my memory. What does Richard look like again?
Richard is described by her friends as being tall, handsome, around 6 foot tall.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. The opposite of the dude from last week. Gotcha. All right.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Yeah.
And that to that extent so far.
Yeah.
Okay.
So detectives think, okay, let's go to Richard. And if anything, we might have to subpoena his records because you were the last person she was trying to talk to. Because after she had made those phone calls to him, her phone was shut off.
But why didn't they subpoena those records in the first place after talking to him?
Because I really don't know because I was thinking the same thing too. I'm like, why wouldn't they look into him more?
Yeah, he admitted to them that, like, he did see her at least the day before.
Yeah.
Or, like, yeah, the day before, I guess, right? So why wouldn't they just
I go thought ahead that was so strange.
Because I know at the time, and it might be the case now, too, but, like, you have to subpoena for, like, you know, cell phone records. These companies don't just hand them out, even if you're, like, I'm law enforcement. So it can take a while.
It can take a while.
So it's now, like, okay, it's slowing down the investigation. If he's the person that did this, it's giving him opportunity to run. It's giving him opportunity to come up with a better story. It's giving him just too much time.
Mm-hmm.
So
thumbs down for the cops right now.
Yeah. No, I definitely think that this is something that they missed really early on that they should have, you know, dotted their I's and crossed their T's on.
Yep.
Her cousin, Janice, on Ice Cold Murder, mentioned that when Jackie's body was found and it was confirmed to be Jackie, Richard all of a sudden wasn't really talking to their family.
Hmm.
He had stepped back. And she thought that that was odd. Because up until this point, he was very much concerned. He seemed like a concerned boyfriend and was just being very supportive. And right. All of a sudden, no. He just, like a light switch went off.
That's one way to put it.
So, in the meantime, another anonymous tip comes in. I know you guys are getting tired of these anonymous tips, but you know what? They're helpful. I mean, the first one, I don't really know so much whether that was helpful because it was very generic description of a black man. But the second tip that came in was about her car.
Right.
And now this third tip that's coming in is about someone who's associated with Richard, one of Richard's friends. So someone knows one of his friends. So this anonymous tip is about Brittany and Mike, and Mike happens to be a close friend of Richard. The tipster didn't really give information as to like how they know this person and so forth, but they kind of hinted that Mike knows about the murder. Okay. And Brittany does too. And it turns out that Mike and Brittany are boyfriend and girlfriend.
Here we go.
And so they take a lead on this, and they were able to find Mike and Brittany. They bring them in for questioning, and Mike said that he hadn't seen Richard in a week. That's your close friend? You haven't seen him in a week? Have you spoken to him? He didn't really go into those details.
I mean, do you see your close friends every week? I don't.
No, but the way that on the show they made it seem like
he wanted to put some distance.
Like there was distance.
I haven't seen that around here.
Exactly. That's the vibe I got, that they were not close friends at all. So he did know that Richard did have jealous tendencies, and he kind of hinted at that during the conversation with the detectives. He said that Richard, I guess, confessed to him or told him that he had been looking at Jackie's phone and had found that she was talking to other people, other men. But he did not give any information as to Jackie's murder. When they were asked, do you know anything about Jackie's murder? Is Richard involved? They were just like, no, we don't know anything about this.
And they were interviewed separately, right? I feel like that's like standard policy. I think it's standard.
I know, but I don't know. The way that the show made it seem was as if Brittany, it felt like she was being influenced or going along with what Mike was saying. That's why I'm saying that.
Well, if they had them in the same room, that would be mistake number two already. Like, I could do this. What the heck? Ridiculous. Okay. Hopefully that wasn't the case.
I hope it's not the case.
Yeah, and I hope they separated them. Because it could be that she was under his influence, right? Still being in another room.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So after this, detectives arranged for the security guard to come back in, basically participate in a photo lineup.
Gotcha.
And he does come in, and immediately, without hesitation, he points to Richard.
Oh, no.
And say, that's a guy I saw. Gosh, so this is all unfolding, again, November 24th. I'm like, this is a lot.
This is around Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No. How dare you? This holiday is about food, not about looking for your, like, relative's killer. You know what I'm saying? Or trying to hunt down their killer. Like, how dare you?
Literally, when she disappeared.
All year for that holiday. I'd be so.
Yeah. Richard's cell phone records come in. What they notice is that his cell phone was off for most of the day. At least most of the day when Jackie went missing. So when she went missing on November 17th. They believe that he intentionally turned off his phone.
Yep.
And I thought that immediately.
Same. Right when you said that.
Yep. He was brought in and interviewed, and they didn't tell him that he was a suspect in this case. He comes in as the loving, concerned boyfriend that just wants to have this case solved, right? I think that's why when they asked him if he would be willing to give up his DNA, he immediately consented, because he's like, oh yeah, like, of course, like, I'm just trying to help. You know, you guys are not on to me. So they were able to do that. And then after they get his DNA, that's when they tell him, hey, we do have quite a bit of evidence and it's not looking so good for you.
Ooh.
So at this point, he starts freaking out. Ooh. He starts cursing. He's very upset. Mm-hmm. He says to them, I don't want to talk to you guys anymore.
I want a lawyer. I knew
it. I was like, Fifth Amendment. At that point, they felt that they still had enough on him and they didn't want him to walk while they're getting his DNA tested, right? To see like if it's a match with any of the things that they took into evidence. The blood on Jackie's shirt, the DNA under her nail, the rope. They were able to put him on a 48-hour hold at the jail while they waited for it to come back. During the 48 hours, they discovered that in February 2010, Jackie actually had an order of protection against Richard.
No.
Because he had choked her and pushed her to the ground.
Ugh.
Which is really sad given how she died. And
yep.
Her family was in shock. They had no idea that this was even going on.
Her friends, too? They had no idea?
It didn't appear that they knew.
The most dangerous thing is not telling anybody because then something happens. No one has any idea. They sitting up with Richard just chatting it up, not knowing, you know, that he had put hands on their loved one.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Given his violent nature, now knowing about this order of protection and the manner in which Jackie died, detectives move forward and they charge him with first-degree murder on November 26. At this point, though, the prosecution was still working on bringing the case forward because they didn't feel that they had anything concrete enough. Detectives are still able to put forth that charge. It's just whether that case goes forward is really based on whether the prosecution can build this case.
Right.
On November 27th, Richard is questioned more and he again tries to talk about his alibi. You know, like, I was home on Tuesday and Wednesday I was with my mom, but joke's on you, Richard, because they interviewed your mother and she said that she was not home on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Wow. Gotcha now.
Yeah.
Damn.
Then 2 days later on the 29th, mind you, you know, he's in jail at this point. They're holding him. Okay. He was searched on the 29th when he was taken back down to the jail and they found a note in his shoe. And when they had opened it, it looked like a list of different alibis that he was trying to come up with.
Oh my goodness.
They did not go into details as to what it said, but everything on the list, they were like, nope, you were not doing that. Nope, you were not doing that. Lies, lies, lies. So they actually confront him on this. They give him the paper. They're like, you know, we have this list of alibis that you were trying to come up with. He takes a paper and he rips it in front of them.
I'm sure they took a picture of it first. I hope so, because then that would be another mistake. Seriously, there's so many red flags for the cops in this episode.
Yeah.
I hope they did not put evidence in front of that man without taking pictures of it. Or the original in front of him. It looked like they did.
I was confused about that, too, because I was like, they gave him the original? I don't know. But he's laughing hysterically at this point, and he says to them, I hope that that's not all you have on this case. The detectives were like, that's fine. We got a copy of it, so.
Okay, so they did have a copy.
But I'm like, why would you?
But did they? They could just be saying that.
They could just be saying that, but I'm like, did they really give him the original?
They can't be that dumb.
Yeah, I'm going to hope that they didn't.
I hope they didn't.
They told him, no, it's fine. We got a copy anyways. And when they said that to him, his entire demeanor changed.
Mm.
As if he's like, oh, fuck. Like, what do they got on me?
Yeah.
He starts cursing at them. The interview goes nowhere. They're like, okay, we're done.
It's rare for the cops to be like, I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's usually the person like, I want a lawyer. Hmm.
So at this point, you know, the family is just kind of going through everything and trying to put the pieces together of like what went wrong. And they truly feel that it got to a point where Richard was obsessed with Jackie.
Okay.
And that he was jealous of her.
Yeah.
And that he basically couldn't let her go. An interesting thing is, remember I had said that Mike and Brittany, who were close with Richard, they were interviewed.
Right.
Brittany actually came back in by herself, it seems like, this time. She had things to tell them that she hadn't said before. The detectives were wondering, well, why didn't she say before? Well, maybe she was scared of Richard. And knowing now
and
that
her
Richard...
Too.
Possibly her boyfriend too, yeah. But now knowing that Richard at this point had been in jail...
Yeah.
She felt comfortable enough to come forward with this information.
Wow.
So she said on November 17th, she lives with her boyfriend, Mike, and she was playing a prank on him. I don't know why she would do this, but the prank was her trying to scare him by jumping from underneath the bed.
That's some shit I used to do. Remember I used to jump out of the laundry thing?
Really?
Yeah.
I used to do it all the time. But I just thought it was weird as hell, but I'm like, to each their own. But she said she was waiting under the bed, and Mike came in, and he was on speakerphone with Richard. Oh. And so she was just kind of like, oh, okay. And the conversation seemed serious, so she was just like under the bed, like, okay, I guess I'm not going to scare him. But
That's awkward as hell.
Yeah.
What? Okay.
And I wonder, like, whatever happened with, like, did you ever come from underneath the bed?
She probably poked her head out, like... Like, just saying, hey, don't be scared. I'm right here. Please.
Yeah. I don't know if she ever did that. But anyway, she overheard Richard crying to Mike, basically confessing to killing Jackie.
Oh.
Putting her in the car, leaving the car at Willows Creek, the apartment complex. Detectives are smiling because they're like, case closed.
Oh my God.
We got you, Richard. Brittany confessed to being the person that had called about the car. She was a tipster.
Oh, that said there's a car in this parking lot.
Yeah.
Wow.
She's like, that was me. Because they were like, why didn't you come forward before? And right. She's like, I technically did.
Yeah.
That was me.
Yeah. She must have been really scared to not... I mean, she even took a risk by calling in.
Yeah.
Because, you know, with these guys and their friendships, you don't know where their loyalty lies at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? This bromance stuff. Like, they could just be... He could have been the type, her boyfriend, to, like, really even kill her if she had come forward and told mm-hmm. on his friend type of stuff.
Yeah.
These dudes are backwards, I tell you. But, okay.
So now it is December 3rd, 2010, and detectives are now searching Richard's home with his mom. Okay, they get the search warrant, and the house is clear. But then they notice that there's a shed in the back. And they're like, okay, we're going to search the shed. They saw a rope hanging on the wall, and it looked to be very similar to the rope around Jackie's neck when they found her. Yeah. So they take the rope to see if it's a match, and they send it into lab for it to get tested, essentially. And when it came back, the results were inconclusive.
Oh.
And what that means is that they can't confirm nor deny right. that this was a source of the rope that killed Jackie.
That would have been too easy.
Yeah.
It would have been so good. Oh,
but it's okay. It's okay because they have other stuff, right?
Okay.
So weeks later, the DNA evidence comes back from Jackie's shirt, and it was a match to Richard's DNA.
The blood on her shirt?
Yes.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Okay. If you were home all day, how'd that happen?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So someone's lying, and his name is Richard.
Right.
So now they have enough to move forward with this case, and the case moves forward to trial. The trial started in July of 2012, and the prosecution presented this as a case of jealousy that turned into murder. They had very strong evidence, physical evidence in this case, to support that. On November 17th, Jackie did plan to see Marcus, but she wanted to break up with Richard first. He got upset, strangled her, killed her, put her in the car, put her in the trunk of the car, of her car, and drove her car to Willows Creek. Left the car there, purposely backed up so that the tag wouldn't be displayed.
Right, and it would take longer to find her.
Yeah, it would take longer to find her. Richard's story was that Jackie was the aggressor, that she had attacked him first, and this was really a case of self-defense. He did what had to be done.
How tall was Jackie? What was her weight?
I'm glad you asked. So it's funny because Jackie's friends described her as being tall.
Right.
But she's actually 5'5".
Okay.
That's tall? I guess to someone who's maybe like 5 feet tall, that like...
Well, you're like what, 5...
I'm 5'9 and 3/4". I'm 5'10".
You're 5'10". And I'm 5'7". Or 5'6", 3/4".
You're 5'6".
No, I'm 5'7". Please don't play this game right now.
No, I think you posted that on one of your pictures or something, that you were 5'7", and I wanted to comment so
Norma,
bad.
You are... Come on.
No, someone had commented, like, wow, you're so tall. How tall are you? I wanted to be like, she's 5'6", dot, dot.
No.
But I didn't. I refrained, okay?
Okay, so Jackie was 5'5".
She's 5'5". Richard was 6 foot tall and around 230 pounds.
Please.
And Jackie was slim. Like, if you see pictures of her, she is skinny.
Okay,
yeah, so he better not even, like, that just sounds ridiculous.
Yeah,
that's a ridiculous story to tell, and his attorney should feel really just crazy for even letting him tell that kind of story, mm-hmm. or putting on that kind of story, because what,
it makes no sense. It really does not.
It's not to say that, listen, domestic violence doesn't happen the other way around either, right? Because mm-hmm. men are abused, and sometimes they don't come forward because of what society would say, right? If you're a male being beaten up, period,
that's
right?
True. Yeah.
Especially if it's a female that's beating you up. So it's not to say that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. It's very unlikely, I think, that it happened here in this scenario.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up, because I wouldn't have.
Yeah, so I'd be like, yo, MD's. Right.
So the jury deliberates. They didn't say for how long, but he is found guilty of second-degree murder.
Okay.
Not first degree. And this okay. was really shocking to the prosecution. It was shocking to her family. The jury, they just basically say if you're guilty or not of so-and-so crime. It's really the judge that hammers in the sentence, that whatever you get.
But why? Okay, so the distinction, there has to be a distinction, I'm sure,
so, okay.
between the first and second degree murder.
So right? the first degree murder, they were saying that it has to be premeditated.
Right.
And I guess the jury did not believe that it was premeditated.
Right. They probably feel like it was in the moment.
Yes.
A crime of passion.
Yes, exactly.
Gotcha.
And the detectives were really confused. They're like, we don't understand how they don't see how we see it. It's clearly premeditated, but it just was not the case for them.
The math wasn't mathing.
Yeah. I guess I could see that point of being, like, in the moment and just losing your mind.
Yeah. I can kind of see that more so than premeditated stuff. But again, I feel like there's just a lot that the detectives don't know, that we don't know, right?
Yeah.
That maybe it could have been premeditated. It just would be hard to prove.
It'd be hard to prove,
to
yeah.
a jury of 12 people.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So, second degree murder. And of course, that means yeah. a little bit of a lesser sentence.
Yeah.
Right? Because first degree usually carries the possibility of life.
Yeah.
So, I mean, every state is different, though. What does Tennessee give for second degree murder?
So, for second degree murder in Tennessee, it's 15 to 60 years
okay.
in prison.
So, basically, if you live long enough, you could get out of prison. So,
yeah.
okay.
Yep. The judge sentences Richard to 25 years.
That's it?
Without the possibility of parole.
Oh, wait, what?
During those 25 years. So...
Oh, during the 25 years.
Yeah.
Okay, so he can't be paroled early.
No, exactly.
Okay, because I was like, wait a minute. He, you know, under second degree murder,
mm-hmm.
you're not supposed to have, without the possibility of parole. But now I get what you mean.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
So her family was very upset about the outcome. They felt that this was not enough time.
Yeah,
and it makes sense.
How old is he at this point? Like, he was 24,
right? So at this point, he's 26.
But still, like, he could get on his 50s, like, is still young.
Yeah.
He could still live his life.
Exactly, that's why.
He could still have kids.
Mm-hmm. This is why her family is very upset.
Somebody gonna want to be his pen pal. I can't. If it comes up on my TikTok, I'm scrolling past it. That's all I'm saying. That's so upsetting.
Yeah.
He took a life, and he gets to have a second chance at life.
Mm-hmm. Literally, I was shocked by the sentencing. I really was.
I mean, I'm shocked too. So he did, so he did appeal.
He appealed in 2014.
Okay.
Okay. It was denied.
Of course.
So, you know, the trial court's decision was affirmed, and yeah, as we speak, he is currently in prison serving his sentence, 25 years.
Wow.
He might try to appeal again. I just didn't see anything else from 2014.
I mean, prison is supposed to be for rehabilitation. I just, you know, for some people, sometimes that's not possible. You would just hope that this is the case for him, right? And he does turn his life around and he shows, like, you know, repentance and all that kind of stuff. You hope that that's the case, right? But
mm-hmm.
it's not certain. I mean, this is just really sad for her family, you know, to have to, like, just the mental torture of just knowing this man was in your house after the fact, in your face after the
yes.
fact, probably at the funeral, right? In front row.
I'm sure.
It's just like, that takes it to a whole nother level of evil.
I agree.
It's just too much.
It's just a lot for the family. They were saying that they still obviously are grieving about this. Just, again, it's the manner. It's the fact that she was also 21 at the time, right?
Right.
She's found in her trunk. I mean, it's just...
How could you discard of her just like that? Like,
exactly.
That's crazy.
She had such big dreams, big goals. Her friend mentions that what makes her really, really sad is the fact that they'll never be able to be salon owners together.
Right. So much potential. She goes through, stolen. You
know, right, so much potential. They could have gone to motherhood together.
Yeah.
You know, and just so many things that Jackie misses. And for what? Because she's trying to break up with you? Because it wasn't working?
That's sad.
But yeah, that's the case of Jacqueline Miller.
Really, really sad stuff. Can only hope that her family just finds peace, some sort of peace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is just beyond what anyone, I don't know. It's just a lot. These stories are heavy for us to tell, but like, we don't forget that it's even heavier for the people who deal with it, right? Who have to live this. So we send them well wishes.
Definitely.
And that's it. We'll see you guys next Tuesday for another episode of It's the Mystery for Me.
Stay safe out there.